So welcome everyone this evening. This is going to be a very interesting topic. We have with us Josh Pearson. My name is Sharon, by the way. And Josh spoke to us at, was it the spring conference?
It was
on the
top
of topic of ableism, but it was kind of compressed and we didn't get a chance to really talk about what it meant for us. And the whole topic has been rolling around my mind since then. So I asked Josh, and the publication committee agreed to ask him to come on and talk with us. Josh worked at UMass Amherst in disability services for quite a long time, and now works for the Polis Center and lives in, I forget where
Northampton. Yeah.
That's right. Northampton. Okay. So I will ask Josh to give us a little presentation about this topic, and take it away, Josh.
Yes. All right. Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you all for coming. This is, it's really great to see this many of you here. Ableism is a pretty new discussion to our community by name. We've talked about a lot of the topics involved in ableism for years, but I don't know that we've ever necessarily put them into the language, which I'm going to present them by tonight. So before I jump into everything, I just want to say we are going to be discussing what potentially could be some heavy things for people. So if at any point you need to step away, take a breather, totally understand, do whatever is best for you to feel safe and comfortable in this space. And I promise we are not going to get too heavy. So, you know, but this is something that does need to be talked about. And so I figure we'll start here. And I'm sure this won't be the last conversation that happens on ableism in Bay State. This is something that affects all of us. And it's not just one person that should be carrying the torch and having this conversation. So with this, I'm hoping that we can start some community dialogue and make each other aware and make ourselves aware of what ableism is. And I think that's a really good place to start before I jump into kind of my formal presentation on this. I want to put it out to the group. Does anybody have an idea thought of what ableism is, or want to give an example of a type of ableism that you may have experienced? I just want to see where your knowledge is at on this.
I'll start with a little, this is Sharon. You know, we hear racism, sexism, and this is another ism, if you will. And I, from what I gather about it, it's people who are called able-bodied who are feeling inferior or just not understanding disability and doing things often not even malignantly, just because they don't know any different, that are disrespectful or maybe patronizing or whatever it might be. That's kind of my broad understanding of it.
Okay. Anybody else?
Hi, this is Myra. I can give an example. a couple weeks ago, I was in a group of people and one person happened to make a remark. You might be aware of this place, Josh. In Amherst, they put a roundabout. Hold on. They put a roundabout in the center of town, and there is no way to cross it for a blind person. Mm-hmm. And everybody seems very happy with it because they drive cars and they don't have to stop at lights, and it's very easy. And he was saying it was the best thing that ever happened. And I said, not if you have to cross it and you're blind. And he thought about it for a second and he said, oh, wow. I never thought about that. You can't cross that, can you? And I said, no, I can't use it at all. And I've been told by mobility instructors not even to try to cross it. And it had just never dawned on him that it would be anything that could be problematic for anybody. He just thought, my life is great because I use it and It didn't even enter his sphere of thought that it could be a major problem. And I don't know if that counts as ableism, but it seems to me it's just some people just don't, their whole lens is so, they're very narrowly focused, and they don't get that anybody isn't like them.
Exactly. So what you two have both illustrated, and I promise we're going to have more time for discussion in a little bit. I want to get through some key terms and definitions, and then we can open it back up to community. But what you have both hit on in your explanation and your example are the two kinds of ableism. So we deal with individualized ableism from person to person, and that is oftentimes called micro ableism. So anybody ever heard the term microaggression?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Typically, it's talked about in a racial context, but it very much applies to disability as well. So there's micro-level ableism or individualized ableism. There's also systemic ableism, which is kind of what you hit on, Myra, where society makes these big decisions about how to build our world, and they don't take into account the perspective that not everybody is like them. And so that's the macro level. And then there's also internalized ableism, which is sort of a mix of all of that. And we do that to ourselves and to each other. And I'll hit on that real quick. So I'm going to very quickly breeze through some definitions and key terms and a little bit of ableist language. And then we will open it back up for discussion. Defining disability. So I know a lot of us are most likely aware of what disability is, but I want to officially give a societal definition of it. So disability in the context of society is somebody who is not able-bodied or able-minded. Now, that's not a definitive definition, but it's the closest thing that you know, easiest way to sum up disability. Oftentimes, disability is seen in society as a loss. It's conceptualized as a loss, a lack of function, or abnormal, right? So the idea in society is that the able-bodied or the non-disabled perspective is normal. And when somebody acquires a disability, either at birth or at some point in their lives, they are then outside the norm of society. And that's where ableism really starts, with the individual who acquires the disability later in life, or at some point in their life after birth. And I'll start particularly with this group. So somebody who acquires a disability at some point in their lives, they have grown up, let's say they've grown up sighted for a lot of their lives. They have very much taken into every facet of their mindset the sighted world's perceptions of blindness. Sighted people perceive us as inferior, as ignorant, as incapable, as childlike. They infantilize us. So that is, they talk down to us like we're children. Oftentimes they equate blindness with other disabilities, usually cognitive or deafness. So if you've ever had the sighted folks who talk loudly and slowly, right, to you, that is an example of an ableist microaggression, in that it's a behavior that is done out of prejudice, oftentimes unintentionally, right? But society has these misconceptions about blindness. And we as individuals have to spend our entire lives educating people and setting them straight and proving them wrong and breaking down all these barriers and explaining how we can live just as capable lives as them, and how the adaptations that we have built into society through the use of assistive technology, through all of the things that ACB and other blindness orgs advocate for put us on an equal playing field, right? And if there were no ableism in the world, organizations like ACB would not need to exist. The only reason that we do exist is because we have received for centuries, millennia, very long time, unequal treatment at the hands of society who think that we are less than or abnormal or, you know, people who are to be pitied or else people to be praised ridiculously, right? So there's the idea, I call it the myth of the super blind, right? It's the idea that, oh my God, you know, you're amazing. And I get it all the time. Oh my God, you know, I'm standing at a bus stop, right? And somebody comes up, you're amazing. You're incredible. I'm like, I'm waiting for the bus and I'm 10 minutes late. I'm really not that amazing, right? Like, you know, and we, my way of responding to people now is I will ask them, well, why do you think I'm amazing, right? Usually how that turns back, you know, the follow-up is one of a couple things. It's either, oh my God, I could never do what you do if I were blind, right? So again, there's that idea of if I were in your shoes, my life would not be as good as yours. And they have no idea how you as the individual feel about your blindness. You might be really struggling hard with it, but you're out and about, you're doing your thing, and they just see you not living like a shut-in, which is how they conceptualize a lot of blind people. You know, they think that we have no quality of life. So to actually see people out and about, I get it all the time. I play music all over the country, and I hear people all the time say, oh my God, it's so great to see you out. I'm like, it's great to see you out. Like, where else would I be? Ableism and the idea of disability, it really comes down to two models of disability. There's two ways of thinking about disability. There's the medical model of disability, and the medical model of disability is what organizations like the Mass Commission, so very much state government and systems of healthcare and things like that are based in. And that says to the disabled person, you yourself, you are broken, you need to be cured, or you need to be responsible as the individual for advocating for absolutely everything you need. We're not going to do anything as a society to make sure that you have equal access. You need to be the person to do that, right? And then the counter to that is the social model of disability. And this is what we see a lot of disability activists and advocates arguing for now, is it states that social barriers such as physical, social, and financial disable us, not our disabilities. And that's how I tend to view the world around me. Society has an ownership to make things accessible, to make the built world. So Myra, in your roundabout example, when urban planners are and architects are planning out the physical environments that we all need to interact with as members of the public going in and around the world, the experiences of disabled people and how we access the world need to be taken into account. And then there's also the digital piece. So any of you web accessibility folks know exactly where I'm going with this one. The digital environment, which has given us so many opportunities, is only as good as how it's designed. And the problem with that is most comp sci programs in college, all the computer science degrees, a lot of engineering degrees, all of these very prestigious programs that are turning out software and web developers and designers and engineers left and right, they're teaching the model from the able-bodied or non-disabled perspective. So they're not teaching how to access things from a screen reader perspective. And the screen reader perspective is just one perspective. If you're, let's say you're blind and you have neuropathy, so typing is really difficult for you, or you're deafblind and you access material largely through a braille display, right? completely different modes of access. Or let's say you're blind and you have no hands. You need to dictate everything. That's a completely different way of access than just the typical screen reader. So there's all these different ways that we access the world that need to be taken into account, that because society just builds for the majority of people that are out there in the world, it means that we are excluded. And it's a battle. Every day is a battle to prove that we are capable, that we deserve to be in these spaces. And it puts a lot of undue burden and emotional labor on the individual person having to go through these things. So types of ableism, you know, ableism is very much tied to disability identity. So that's how does a person view themselves in their disability? And when somebody acquires a disability at some point, either in birth or at some point in their lives, they have to figure out, well, what does that mean to me in the context of how the rest of the world views disability? Your self-image, how you view your blindness, how you think about it, the things that you choose to advocate for, the ways that you respond to sighted perceptions of blindness, all of that fits under the umbrella of disability identity. Now, internalized ableism is that prejudice turned against yourself. So I'm going to go back to the myth of the superblind for a minute. So that's the idea that here are all of these skills that the state agency, and I picked the state agency because the commission over the past 100 years has set up all kinds of wonderful programs and helped fund many incredible organizations that we're all familiar with that have given us a lot of support and skill-based training in being able to navigate the world and adapt to society and lead capable, independent lives. The issue with that is it's still very much, it's the individual who has to go through that training. It's the individual who has to navigate that rather than training society. Here's how to design things so that the individual person doesn't have to do so much heavy lifting. Internalized ableism comes into play when you look at somebody, and I did this for years, and it's been a struggle to learn how to not do it. I would look at people who were leaders in the blindness community. And I myself, I've been blind since birth. I would look at people who were leaders in the blindness community and I would go, oh my God, you have all of these skills. You know everything about assistive technology. Your O&M skills are flawless. You can live independently. You can cook independently. At some level, I don't measure up, right? Or the reverse of that is you are the blind person who the sighted world goes, oh my God, you're incredible. You're amazing, right? For just living your life. And then you encounter another blind person who maybe has not gone through the same type of training that you have, doesn't have the same comfortability with their blindness or with the various skills that go into helping us lead independent lives, all of the things that we are taught through different orgs here in the state and elsewhere. And we look at people like that and, well, exactly, that's the phrase, right? People like that. We look at people whose skill level is different than ours and we'll say, oh, I'm not like that person, right? So there's a little bit of judgment there. There's a little bit of prejudice there. That's the internalized ableism piece. So you see, we've swallowed the messages that the sighted world has about blindness, and we can't help it because we have to fight it all the time, right? So we're aware of these prejudices and misconceptions that people have around us. And sometimes we turn them against ourselves and sometimes we turn them against each other. So that's something that we have to, it's constantly kind of checking ourselves on and making sure that we are just giving people room to have a human experience, just like we're having a human experience and realizing everybody lives blindness in a different way. And that's the beauty of it, is blindness is such a broad perspective. You know, we don't all live it in the same way. So that's internalized ableism. Individualized ableism is exactly what I talked about. So the sighted person who has the misconceptions, the, oh my God, let me hold the door for you, right? Or I've gotten this one before. When I was in between guide dogs, I was about to cross a street and somebody came up and they grabbed the tip of my cane and held it about 5 feet in the air above my head and walked me across the street to the opposite corner. And I had to say, I wasn't going that way, you know, thank you, you know, and then turn around and recross and walk the way I was going. I mean, we could spend all night just on ableist microaggressions, right? The things that people do 99% of the time, they're not meant to be malicious. They're not born out of ill intent, right? People don't intentionally mean us harm. But because society has really not tried to understand the blindness perspective, really, we always kind of face this because people are, they're not taught blindness history. They're not taught any of this stuff in public school. Usually the blind folks that they can name on one hand are Helen Keller, Louis Braille, Ray Charles, Stevie Wonder. And now I think Christine Ha fits into that category as well. She's the blind chef, one of the blind chefs. And, you know, there are others, but, you know, if we're just going with the successful blind people that sighted people kind of throw at us all the time, that's kind of the big four, big five. They don't really understand blindness culture. And so we're always kind of having to deal with these stereotypes. And one thing that's really helped me navigate that, because it can change from day to day, right? So I remember I got on a bus one time and I'd been riding the same bus for about 10 years. I knew the drivers by name. They knew me. And this driver looked at me one day. He said, "Josh, where's your ID card?" I said, "You're addressing me by name. You can obviously see that I'm not making eye contact with you. There's a huge line of people behind me. I've been riding your bus for at least 10 years. You really need to see my ID card." And he said, "Yes, you people are supposed to have ID cards, right? You people, like we're some kind of second-class citizens." Again, I could spend a long time on just ableist microaggressions on the individual level. What I want to also hit on are the systemic aggressions that go on. So that is when our environments are not structured in the right way. When a college disability services office does not understand all of the different types of assistive technologies that people use, and they think that because they have a screen reader, a text-to-speech program that's typically used for people with dyslexia, that that's going to meet the same needs as a blind person needing a screen reader that allows full keyboard navigation, right? When a campus ADA compliance officer, upon hearing about some of the experiences of disabled students on the campus, says, "Well, if they're really having such a hard time, their parents can call and lodge a complaint," right? Like we don't have our own voices. So really it's society on a massive level, not really wanting to understand the disabled perspective and continuing to build the world and design our content in such a way that it perpetually excludes us. Ableism, this next statement, I do want to preface with, I say this next bit as a white hetero man, so I can only speak to so much of this. Ableism has deep roots and is very much connected to other systems of oppression. So ableism is really tied to intelligence, is tied to equality. We see it all the time with marriage equality, where people with disabilities are often told that they can't marry or they will lose their benefits, or sighted people feel that a blind person could never marry a sighted person. That conversation very much still goes on in our society these days. The whole Social Security conversation around people needing to choose between their benefits or a job that gives them upward mobility in life. All of these kinds of societal structures are built into ableism. Ableism is linked to eugenics. Ableism is linked to trans or Black and brown folks being told that they are inferior. Lacking intelligence, all of these different things. And that itself is a whole separate conversation, which I can speak to a little bit, but we should, if we want to explore that route, I would encourage us to reach out to members of our community who can actually speak, with a lot more lived experience than I can on that regard.
Josh, I'm yes. wondering, I'm just think aware of time.
Yep. One thing I want to hit on real quick is ableist language, okay. And I'll be really quick with this. There are a lot of examples. If you Google ableist language, you're going to find a million things. The one thing I want to point out as it pertains to us is the use of the word blind. And the use of the word blind in sighted society, we see it blind justice, blind love. He walked around blindly. Blind drunk, blind, so blindness in that, the parlance of those terms, blindness means ignorant, blindness means walking around unaware, so it, again, it links blindness to ignorance, and it links blindness to just a general lack of awareness. And that's a really harmful word. So we really want to think about how these terms are used and the fact that they do have meaning. And I find myself having to strike ableist words. I used to use the word crazy all the time. Oh my God, that's crazy. That's insane. That's nuts. I've been switching it up lately because those terms really affect people who are dealing with various mental and psychological disabilities. So I use words like wild or preposterous, or find different adjectives. And it's a really hard thing to do, to check your language, but language does matter because language breeds perception. We could spend a long time on each of these topics, but I want to give you all time to kind of respond, hear things that have come up as we've gone through this, and we'll open it up.
Oh, here's Cindy. Okay, let me... Oh, okay. Jeez, everyone's just popping up here. All right, let's see.
I'm unmuted.
Okay, go ahead, Cindy. Yeah, go ahead.
I certainly agree with everything you said. Having sort of lived a lot of my work life in the IL movement and lived it personally, two things. I'm reminded of a book I read almost 50 years ago, and I'm thinking, gee, things change, but things don't change, called The Making of Blind Men, about how blindness is, caused by our environment and external factors, that blind beggar is really sort of someone who's figured it all out, but they're just playing right into that. But the other thing I wanted to say is, I feel like it's very tricky. I mean, it's damned if you do and damned if you don't. So I used to live my life kind of with the attitude of like, I don't need anything. I'm okay. Do this class, this job, whatever, I'll take care of my own needs we don't even need to discuss this. And now I'm very out there with it, about my needs, my differences, but neither one of those MOs is without its problems. They both have problems. They both have the same problems because it's still the same people out there.
Right.
Okay, let me, Sharon, you're next. Hold on. Okay, Sharon.
Got it.
Good.
Okay. Whereas I mostly I'm right there with you, Josh. I still feel that for me, blindness is not just an environmental thing. I'm thinking about sitting outside in the gazebo at my building where there's conversation going on and gestures and eye contact and things moving really quickly, and I can feel left behind. And I'll say to people, you know, what's going on? That sort of thing. So in a way, it's just, they're not being mean or anything to me. They're just using a sense that I don't have. And that does still feel to me like a loss, even though I've never had it. I'm blind from birth. But I was really interested in your talk about language, because I've been noticing that a lot lately too, you know, a blind corner or this or that, you know, or was it in baseball, it was the disabled list and now it's the injury list, right? So it's yes. Just really interesting that people are kind of getting an idea that it does make a difference. So I'm really glad you pointed that out. Thank you.
Okay. Elizabeth, you're next. Let me, okay. Yeah. You can unmute Elizabeth and go ahead. You should be able to.
Yeah, I'm unmuted. Josh, this is an awesome topic. Excuse me, and thank you for it. I can listen to you all night. I just want to share that I had a same experience a while ago with riding a bus, this one particular bus, you know, for about a year or so. And it was just this one day, this bus driver, he decided to ask me after months and months and months taking that bus for my blind access card. And it kind of threw me, you know. It seems like he was having a bad day anyways. So luckily, I would carry it with me all the time just in case. So you would say that was an able microaggression situation at that time. And same things happens at church. You know, I feel like the oddball out a lot of times. You know, if I go up and ask for assistance, whatever it may be, you can just sense that people are trying to get out of your way as quick as possible, and rather than, you know, trying to assist you. So would you also say that will be able microaggression?
Yes, 100%. Yeah. Church religion is really tricky, because a lot of people want to cure us or save us or, you know, assume that our lives are horrible, right? Religion is tough. Yeah.
It is.
Okay, Noni, you're next.
Oh, thanks. Josh, great. You know, we've talked about this topic amongst ourselves before, but what I've never really talked about or really I'm a little concerned about is the whole concept of internal ableism. How can we, you know, as disabled people, within the blindness community, ensure that we're not, you know, contributing to that, or ways that we can avoid, continuing to perpetrate something like that?
I think the first step is we need to stop making rock stars out of our high achievers. Everybody is on the same level. Right? We're all living our blindness the best way that we individually know how. And it's not a simple solution. And honestly, I think it's going to take a lot of community dialogue to figure out what is a good system, because I understand why we do what we do. You know, sighted society sets such low bars that we need to help people feel like they've achieved something. But we also need to not just reward people for living blindness well. I think that's really toxic.
Linda?
I've been visually impaired all my life. I was born premature and so forth. And I, as most know, I also have a hearing impairment. And one thing I noticed, I got to give you a couple of examples of people that might be what you call ableistic or whatever, or maybe just because they don't know any better. Like I was walking with my neighbor and there was some lady over by the Humane Society. It turned out that it was somebody I know, and she was trying to get my attention, but I couldn't hear over the traffic, and I couldn't see her non-verbally gesturing to me if she was. And so my neighbor said, oh, she doesn't hear you over the traffic. And then she came over. But and the same person, and this is another thing that was weird, I was expecting her to come to my apartment. And so she did. And I didn't know that she got in the building, okay? And she was sitting, you know, on a stool. And meanwhile, I'm running upstairs to get my phone to see, well, where's this person? Oh, I have to call her. She doesn't know I'm waiting down here, this or that. And this person I'm talking about says, well, who do you think I am? Well, if she had identified herself, hi, it's Mary or whoever, that wouldn't have happened. And I try to educate people on that. Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
But it doesn't do any good. Hello. Okay, I guess I'm done. You don't want to hear it.
We get you, Linda. That's fine. Great.
Thank you, Linda.
Okay. I'm sorry. I keep hearing my screen reader, and it sounds like you had somebody else on the line. But basically, you know, there are some people that it's just the way they are, and it's hard to educate them about how you can relate to them. You know, like, hey, if you want my attention, I don't answer you. Tap me on the shoulder, or I see better out of my right eye, or please identify yourself. So I can have a conversation with you. You know, I'd like to get to know you better or whatever. And that's what I'm talking about, that kind of ableism.
That makes a lot of sense. If I want to just really quickly respond to that and then we'll give time. Education is a really tricky thing because oftentimes we as individuals are the only blind person that sighted people have ever met. Right. And I mean, I get it all the times on buses, right? People just automatically come up and go, they ask the most intrusive questions in the world, right? What's wrong with you? How did you?
Go ahead, David.
Yeah. Thank you, Josh. Very, very interesting. Very thought provoking. So not to excuse ableism at all, because there are definitely things that cross the line. There's no doubt about that. But I just want to offer another perspective as somebody who would have been, I guess, a card-carrying ableist up until I became blind myself, because which is about 17 or 18 years ago. So, you know, prior to that, you know, I knew nothing about blindness, blind people, beyond what, you know, you mentioned about, you know, I knew Stevie Wonder was and Helen Keller and all of that type of stuff. That was it. And I had never been exposed to a single blind person, or if I ever had ever seen a blind person, I would probably have done, or probably did what I could to avoid them. So I know how sighted people can behave inappropriately, because they've done it with me for sure. You know, grabbing my cane, all that type of stuff, praying for me on the side of the street, and so on. But there's a little part of me that says, you know, I wouldn't have the guts myself when I could see to even approach a blind person to offer to help them. Again, not an excuse for some of the things that happened, but sort of having the perspective of somebody who was one of those people before, sometimes a little bit, sometimes we may are maybe be a little overcritical. And I do find myself sometimes, you know, I'm in a bad mood, somebody does something inappropriate, I snap at them a little bit, you know, say, I don't need help. You know, instead of sort of politely saying, you know, no thanks, I can get to the door or cross the street or something like that. But so just a perspective to keep in mind a little bit. That said, things that didn't bother me before bother me now more, like the use of blind as, you know, as a synonym for, you know, ignorant, stupid, clueless, etc. That that raised, you know, my ears pop up now when I hear that. And there are times when I think, and I was in a meeting, you know, sort of a public type meeting a couple of weeks ago, and somebody said, you know, well, we're not blindly going to go ahead and do this particular thing that, you know, in a precipitous way. And I sort of thought on calling the person out, but I sort of didn't, because I thought maybe the next time he does it, then I will. But anyway, it's a perspective I want to offer a little bit, which is just the other side. And to some extent, takes a little courage. Maybe that's the wrong thing to say, but a little bit more courage than I had when I could see to even approach a blind person to offer to help them. And it is such a small community, the blindness community, that it's like the first time you offer to help a blind person might be the very first time you've even been exposed to a blind person. I don't know. It could be that the people who do offer to help you cross the street are maybe people who have been exposed to blind people before in one way or another, you know, a relative was blind or whatever it might be. But just want to throw that perspective in there. Sometimes we'd be just a little too quick to just condemn people with all our stories about the bad things people do, because there's no doubt that those things are inappropriate.
I think the problem is that society en masse assumes that we need help, right? So rather than coming up and saying, excuse me, do you need help? Oftentimes what we get is, oh, let me help you, or how can I help you, right? So that's kind of just having the assumption that we are just by rote helpless individuals. And that's the ableism. The ableist piece of it isn't the helping. The ableism is the assumption that goes into the act.
Okay, CJ, you're next.
Yeah, I just want to say there are many times that people do need help. They haven't reached their cane experience. They haven't reached knowing where they're going. So that's just an issue too. I wanted to ask Josh, what do you do at Pola Park? At Pola. You work for Pola Company. Is that the soda or the park?
No. Polus. It's P-O-L-U-S. Yes. Yep. We are a organization that provides community support, person-centered community support for people with disabilities. So I run all kinds of programs.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyone else have any more comments or questions for Josh?
I do. It's Sharon.
Sharon.
Okay. Well, the job that I work in right now for UMass has exposed me to people with all different disabilities. And it isn't that I have met them so much as that I've read about them, because I help update fact sheets. And, you know, we as blind people, no doubt, have very little understanding of somebody maybe with mental illness or with developmental disability or whatever. So we have to be humble about that, I think. But what I'm thinking about is how in the world to keep sanity with all these things that happen either inside our head or that we run into every day. And I try to keep, you know, as best I can, a healthy dose of saying, it's just because people don't know. And I liked what David had to say about remembering that people are being brave to come to us. But I also think that for me, at least, there are times when I'll have a day when I say, I just am not going out of the house to face the world, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I just be curious to hear what other people do to keep a balance of humor and tolerance with all of this.
I tend to pick the moments when I want to respond and how I want to respond. I borrow from a concept that really came about through people. I borrow a concept that came about through people with motor disabilities, and it's, they call it spoon culture. So the idea is when you leave the house in the morning, you have a full drawer or bag or whatever you want of metaphorical spoons with you. And every ableist encounter or every encounter that you have during the course of your day that potentially could sap some of your energy out takes away a spoon. And so you need to, you know, just kind of keep a mental tally of, okay, like that ride into work and dealing with all that stuff on the bus, that cost me like 5 spoons, you know? And so just kind of keeping a mental tally of where your energy is at, for me, I've found it helps me better regulate what I want to respond to, when I want to respond to it, how I want to respond to it. And I know if it's the end of the day and I've dealt with a lot of stuff and I'm down a lot of spoons, chances are I'm not going to be too kind when I encounter something, because I'll have just been tired from dealing with a day of microaggressions. So that's when I choose to just say nothing.
Anyone else? Okay, Cindy, you are up.
I just want to say, Sharon, that I have those days too when I just say I'm not leaving the house today. And I think the thing that most keeps me going is that I realize why I'm out there, what I want to do that particular day, or where I want to be, is stronger than all the little incidents that are happening along the way. So if I just keep thinking about, you know, but I want to go to this store, I want to go to this event, you know, it kind of puts the other stuff a little bit more in perspective, because if I give into it, then it's like I'm not doing what I want. So
that's good, Cindy. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Anyone else? Go ahead, Linda.
Okay. I know there's a lot of times I just need, I used to take a lot of buses when I lived, you know, closer to the city. And there were just times, you know, having that kind of a day. And I needed just time for myself so that I could be refreshed for what's happening next. And at the same time, sometimes, like lately, I get disgusted because I don't know who I'm talking to sometimes. And somebody say, hi, how are you? And, you know, I want to know who I'm talking to so I could ask about them also. I mean, that'd be nice. But, you know, I'm at the point basically where even where I go to church, that people don't do that. They forget to say who they are. I'm tired of asking, yada, yada. I think I'll just worship and not talk to anybody afterward. It's all like Zoom now anyway, but that's where I'm coming from. And I last but not least, I think that sometimes ableism of people, you know, against, you know, us can promote somebody to be active in being experiencing internal ableism. That's it.
Okay, so I have two comments, Josh. One about the helping piece and one about the organizational piece. In terms of the helping piece, it's interesting because I understand the thing about how people get tired of answering questions, and I get that. On the other hand, I also understand that, like it or not, we are a low incidence population, and I know, and this isn't right, and this isn't the way it should be, But I know if I'm in a situation and somebody asks me if I need assistance or whatever, and I'm having a bad day, and I snap at them, I know that that person may, the next time they see another blind person, say, well, geez, you know, maybe I'm not going to be as likely to help that person. And I understand that's, you know, we're all individuals. I get that. But, you know, it's something that happens. The other piece, and you were talking about this before, and this is very interesting because you were talking about the whole kind of super blindness piece. And the expectations we have. And it's interesting to me because when I think back on the whole history of the blindness movement, for example, and think about when blind people were falling into subways back in the 80s before we had tactile strips, and groups like the NFB was saying, well, you know, if you had good enough mobility skills, this wouldn't happen to you. I mean, that's like classic internalized ableism right there, being promoted by a blindness organization.
Exactly. We do it to each other. We do it to ourselves. That's why I say it's just something we always have to kind of check, you know.
Anyone else have any more comments?
This is CJ.
Go ahead, CJ.
I just want to say I'm so thankful for everyone in my life who have come to my aid and who have helped as I have progressed to where I am now. And I'm still struggling. I'm not technical. I'm horrible. But there's people there, and then there's agencies there that can help. And I think if we kind of switch it around, I mean, some days I'm writing a book and I'm saying, oh my gosh, you know, what's the matter with you? And then I change it. And I said, you know, you are here right now. So keep on moving and get the help you need. And I'm so thankful for all the help that I've had. So thank you. You all know who you are.
David, with a question for Josh.
Go ahead, David.
I'm not jumping the queue, am I?
No.
I did not raise my hand. I have a question for you, Josh, but it's a concern. Something that makes me very uneasy sometimes, but I don't know in a practical way how you really deal with it. That's the whole issue of fundraising, blindness organizations doing fundraising, because often you either take the approach of, here are some super blind people and contribute to us and we will make more super blind people. Or here is sort of the most miserable, pathetic example of a blind person we can think of and contribute to us so we can, you know, have fewer people to feel sorry for. They'll get a little bit better off. And I, you know, so both of those are very bad, but what would you say about, you know, what are responsible ways to do fundraising if you're a blindness organization and actually take in some money? Because, you know, you have to think about the people who you're soliciting for funds. Do you have any thoughts on fundraising?
I do. I've been thinking a lot about this as I've been trying to fund all the programs that I'm running. I think it's the message that we send out, and the way that I've tried to explain it is if you're funding these programs, you're giving people a chance to reach their full potential and contribute to making the world a more inclusive place. So, and that's the system, the blindness system that is in place right now, largely teaches people how to exist in the world as it is. And with all of the work that I do in trying to help mentor people and get programs funded that are going to increase people's quality of life, that's kind of in the back of my mind, is not let's meet the world where it's at, but let's empower people to be the best that they have the potential to be. And we're not pushing them to be anything they don't want to be. You know, we let people become who they are so that we can design a world that works for everybody. And that's how I've when I've been speaking with people around funding parts of initiatives that I'm starting, that's the way that I approach it is let's build an equal, inclusive world together so that everybody has a chance at a fair shot in life and equity rather than going the charity route or the look at the rock star route.
Okay, Rhonda, you are up. I'm sorry, I didn't see your hand before, but go for it.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Yep.
Okay, so I have a couple of thoughts. One was talking about the education, and I think picking up on something that Tim said, I have tried to make it my practice to be the person that frames the education. So I often have had experiences where children would want to know because my eyes are a different color or because my eyes move a lot and I don't see well. They would want to ask questions and parents would quickly shut them up and say, no, no. But in turn, they would want to know. And so my point is that I want to be the one that frames that. I explain to give people an idea that it's not something to be fearful of. And yes, they ask sometimes intrusive questions, but my goal is hopefully that they will gain an understanding. And so that the next person they encounter, they will have a more informed opinion and response. And I think the other thing that gets me through most of the tough times is to just think about the things that I have going for me, the supports I have in place, things that I enjoy doing, and to look at what's around me in the world, and that oftentimes there are more people in more difficult, challenging situations. And also to have a sense of humor.
Humor is really important. Humor is a great tool, not only for getting you through things, but it's also a good tool to kind of disarm people and make them think about their own way of looking at blindness in a different way. If you can make them laugh with you about blindness, that changes their perspective completely.
Okay, Sharon, I see you. Go for it.
Okay. So lately, I've been thinking about the benefits that I have that some people around me don't. I live in a building that has people that are, you know, older. I mean, 75, 80, sometimes 90. And, you know, I have a good friend here who can't or keep organized for nothing, you know. Am I still there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're
okay.
Good.
You know, yeah, okay. And you know, if I asked her what she's doing tomorrow, I don't know, you know. And so there's a little part of me that's like, whoa, you know, other people have problems besides us, you know, as blind people. And so we've learned to do some things by default, mostly that other people would have to envy. And sometimes I find myself thinking, man, these damn sighted people, what do they know? Or like, I'll be sitting in the lobby and I can hear a couple of different conversations going on at once. And somebody who can see really isn't paying attention to what they're hearing until they look and see that that person is there. So it's just kind of an interesting perspective in that way. And I realized that nobody has the whole pie, you know. We all have our pieces of perception and strengths and weaknesses. And so living here has really brought that to the fore for me. But it's also made me laugh sometimes. So, or like people will say, well, you took a cab? And I'll say, yeah, but you know, you pay how much per year for your, you know, your transportation with your car? I'll say, you know, I would rather have a car, but I bet I spend less on an Uber and a Lyft and a cab than you do with your car insurance. And they go, oh, right. You know, so it's just interesting to turn the tables a little bit.
Anyone else?
I do have one more. This is CJ.
Go ahead, CJ.
I just want to ask people here, did you ever, I remember being at Perkins and asking this group of women when I first initially became visually impaired, did they find that it was different with their friends? And they said, yes, that's, we all talk about that. And that's a big question. And I'm just, I kind of put it out of my head a little bit because it's family or it's this one or that. And I'm thinking, is there a thing about that, that because you've lost your eyesight, that even though people don't even know I'm blind when I go out, I've been told that, they still feel that there's a big responsibility if I go with them? Don't say it's my personality.
No. So you mean, what do you mean in terms of, so clarify a little, you mean they feel responsible for you or?
I'm wondering why it changes. It changed to that whole group at Perkins. They all said the same thing. Or the Carroll Center, too. They all said the same thing. Yeah, we have lost some friends and they don't call as often. They don't invite me to places. Has anyone ever experienced?
I think every single one of us have had that happen, probably one time or another. And it's probably because maybe what you used to share, they don't feel they can share with you because you don't see it anymore, or they don't know how to talk about it. Or I think people are sometimes uncomfortable about, well, what would I be like if I couldn't see? You know?
Yeah.
So it happens. Did we lose you, Josh?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think CJ, there's a lot. The other thing is there's a lot of fear.
Yeah,
blindness is one of the most of any disability. Blindness is one of the most feared disabilities. Yeah.
Right.
So when you see, it's the same thing when you're, if you go in to apply for a job as a blind person, you're sitting there and the person's interviewing you, the HR person, they're sitting there interviewing you and they're thinking in their back of their mind, well, geez, I couldn't do this job if I was blind, because they imagine just like closing their eyes and they think, how would I do this job? So there's a lot of fear around blindness.
Right.
And I think that contributes to people, like Sharon said, people feeling uncomfortable and people not knowing, well, geez, you know, what am I going to talk about with this person?
Family, are they afraid they're going to catch it?
No, I don't know. I don't know if it's that.
No, I don't know about that. Yeah. But
I mean, subliminally.
It's not that you are personally different, but you're in a different category, kind of, in their mind. You know?
Because blindness is so low incidence.
Right.
And they feel like now they don't know how they would handle the world as a blind person. So they can't imagine how you're doing as, quote, well as you're doing. Right. Maybe they don't feel, like Sharon said, they don't feel like they have anything they can relate to you on, or they're worried that how they would relate to you has changed and they don't know how to even have that conversation with you. Yeah.
Right.
Are they going to offend you?
That I can understand.
Are they going to embarrass themselves? You know? Yeah. Think of it if somebody in that you know that all of a sudden is in a wheelchair or something, you know, you might have the same reaction.
Well, and it's the same thing, Sharon. It's like I remember you did you and Jerry, I think, did a presentation a couple years ago at Bay State about how you deal with family issues and all that kind of stuff, and how your family deals with your blindness and that whole kind of thing. So that's a whole other piece of this.
Right.
Right. Right.
I think it's a big piece.
It is. Certainly is.
Right.
Hey, this is Jennifer. Just, I definitely experienced that with friends kind of disappearing, and it's definitely something I hear a lot about from other blind people, like others here saying. One thing I've tried to do, and it's hard to do, is like talk about things with people that are not related to my blindness, not because I'm embarrassed by it, but just those everyday water cooler topics. I think Sharon, you shared this once years ago, you know what happened in the sports game last night, even if you don't like what the outcome was. But, you know, just be able
right,
to,
right.
Yeah, or ask about them, you know, things that, you know, I would just want to be seen as one of the crowd or one of the group or, you know, a set of part of the group like I always was before. And it doesn't always work, though. But sometimes, and then having those ways to change the conversation, like people who want to talk about your blindness and you would rather not. And so coming up with those phrases, like, I don't know what, you know, what it is, but I did have a neighbor, she's done this for 15 years now, where no matter what we're talking about or I'm talking about, she turns it around to my blindness. And like we were on the train the other day and I was using my phone and I had the screen curtain off and she said, oh, I just realized that you have your headphones on and the screen is off. And I was really going to want to offer to help you use your phone, but I can't do that if the screen isn't on. And I kind of stopped and I said, well, you know, I appreciate that offer, but I've been using this phone for gosh, who knows how many years now. And, you know, honestly, I don't really need any help right now, but I'm just saving battery, keeping the screen off. But it was like this assumption that, oh, gosh, you know, Jennifer's going to need help with this. Or they didn't want me up on their deck they were building because all the railings weren't in yet. And they would say, oh, we thought about you when we were building this deck and how important it was to do A, B, C, or D. And I always say things like, yeah, that's safe for everybody. What a great idea.
very good job.
You know, it's not just a quote blindness thing. It's
right.
Right.
You know, where I had an in-law who would say, kids, get those toys off the ground or your mother's gonna fall. And I just said, actually, it's safe for all of us if they put those toys away. And I had to not laugh when she sort of fell over a toy. But, you know, it's one of those things like, how do we reframe things for somebody, even if it's, you know, it digs into your heart, like when someone's really kind of targeting you with, you know, I'm like, I talk to blind people all the time. I work with blind people. I'm a blind person. You know, I'm okay if we talk about something different. Like, that's okay. You know, not that it's bad to talk about blindness things, but it's not all that I am. That's what I'm trying to figure out how to build out that, because that seems to be what people want to focus on in these kind of group situations.
I think it's perfectly okay to explain it exactly like you just did, depending on the person that you're with and if they know you well enough, or you feel like you have enough comfortability with them and you can explain it like that. Look, I live this all the time. I work with blind people. I am blind all the time. Let's talk about something else. You know, I will educate you tomorrow. Tonight, can we just talk about sports or music or movies or whatever the thing is? And if they are really an understanding person who values you for who you are, they'll respect that.
And one time I
like that. Let's talk about it tomorrow. That's good.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I was on a bus one time and somebody asked me a question. I had a horrible day and I know that they're on the bus a lot. And I said to them, you know, I have had a rotten day. I just don't have the energy to talk about this right now. Can you ask me tomorrow morning or something like that? Because I think people need to know that we're human. It's like, you know, we're not just all about the blindness, and do we have to educate every minute, you know? So
I think the other thing that helps me when I'm feeling down about stuff is just trying to keep hold of the like positive and fun stories. You know, I always tell people when I was seeing what it was like to accept assistance, and I said to the man offering to help me across the street, you know, actually it works better if I take your elbow. And so he kind of hemmed and hawed, and I thought, oh, why am I, you know, what did I say? So he finally said, yes, something was really weird. We got across the street and I thought, what is he like, missing an arm? Like something was really weird. And I said to him, I'm sorry, I have to ask you, something seemed unusual. He said, well, I'm riding a bike. And to me, that story, like if someone grabs my arm or just says something, you know, mobility wise, and this, I just remember that situation with that guy because we just both had a wonderful laugh about it together.
That's great.
And now this damn guy rides by me like he lives on the street that I walk down to get to the train. So he's like, hey, it's me, the bike guy. And we just kind of laugh. He'll stop and chat. And, you know, he's like, are you in a hurry? You know, are you going to miss
your train? Join the meeting.
It's great.
But anyway, so those kind of stories help me if I can bring them to my head when something kind of nasty is happening or I'm just frustrated.
Hmm. Well, how are we on time here, Tim?
It's 9:20. So.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think this has been great. Is there anything else before we conclude and thank Josh?
I just want to thank you all. You know, this is some of this could have been some really heavy topics for people. So I just want to thank you all for being vulnerable, and I'm glad that we could talk about this openly and honestly. And I'm sure this won't be the last dialogue on all this. So thank you for having me come and present. I really appreciate you being a part of this.
I think you did a great job of you know, making us aware of ourselves and where other people might be. So thank you very much, Josh. And thank you, Tim, for hosting and for everybody for participating.